Never has a certain iRacing phrase with an Australian accent ever felt so relevant. They say you cut the course. Welcome back to Motorsport 101. When is a track limits penalty not a track limits penalty? Find out over the next 40 minutes on Motorsport 101. Glad you could join us here, folks, for episode 578. I'm your friendly neighborhood host, Dre Harrison, and oh boy. Isn't it fun, gents, when a Formula One race is effectively decided in the steward's office after 500 yards?
sorry, that'll be a 4X, Dre.
Oh, fuck. And then there's a €40,000 fine for swearing. It's all adding up here. This is going to be a very expensive podcast, is all I'll say, the way this is going.
That's only like the seventh most expensive iRacing account out there.
Well, you know, someone's got to fund Evan DeFrancesco's dreams on iRacing every once in a while.
We don't need to do that.
That was the quickest pushback I've heard to anything said on this show in quite some time. Good. You're both awake and alert. That's good to see. We'll be talking all about the F1 Saudi Arabian Grand Prix and the fact that Piastri and Verstappen clashed again. This time there was a cut course, a penalty, and many a dialogue about when is a track limit not a track limit. And hey, this car got to the apex first, right? We'll be talking about some of this silly in regards to racecraft rules and etc. Everybody's favorite part of discussing Formula One, the rule book. Everybody loves that bit, right? Right? Not the racing? No? The politics? No? In that? Okay, fine, whatever. Joining me, as ever, is, of course, Mr. Cameron Buckley. Hello, sir.
Hello, everyone. I'm just out here reminiscing about the fact that despite my stock plan being in tatters, thanks to the world economic climate, I'm still doing better than KTM is.
Oh, man. I suspect that shot was fired in the direction of New York because RJ O'Connor is not here on this week's episode. He's on the way to COTA as we speak. Have a good one out there, buddy. Go well. And filling in for him once again is Jalopnik staff writer, an all-round swell guy, Mr. Ryan Eric King, now complete with a better beard than I am. I'm very jealous. Good to see you, sir. How are you?
I'm doing my best CM Punk cosplay. And I'll have you know that I don't take any slights against KTM personally because I'm not a KTM employee.
Yeah, I mean, if you were, there's a decent chance you've already lost your job as it is, which I guess is not a good sign in the first place. And second of all, King, how are you coping without the loss of your wise man?
I'll survive.
I hope so. Otherwise, you may end up getting speared at this rate.
When do we get to the part where we choke out Pat McAfee?
I would love to have that be a, you know, it was very briefly my phone wallpaper. That was great. the post Mania Raw is one of my highlights of the wrestling year, and so this is one of the few Raws I will actually tune in to watch. And I tuned in and I immediately saw Gunther choking out Pat McAfee, and I'm like, that's my new favorite wrestler of all time right there. this is footage. They need to loop this as the intro every time he's on TV. That would be great action right there. You'll love to see it. Yes, all of that and much, much more. We got Saudi Arabia talk. We got Lando Norris talk because, as Cameron would say, he's once again not beating the allegations.
He is looking guilty as hell.
Yeah, we got Oscar Piastri to talk about Max Verstappen, Ferrari, Mercedes, and Williams too. We even get Williams in there a little bit as well. All of that and much more over the next 40 minutes or so. But places you can find us real quick are on youtube.com/motorsport101 or on facebook.com/motorsport101. You can catch us on Twitter at motorsport_101 or on Instagram at motorsport101pod, where you get highlights of the show, including videos, say, hey, we're actually now actually genuinely a partly visual medium now. Isn't it fun? And you get some occasional monologue in from yours truly as well. Hope you guys have been enjoying that. You can find us on Blue Sky as well, at Dre Harrison, thebsky.social, as well as CBuckley917 and Ryan Eric King, when he occasionally posts cycling highlights. Always a good time when that happens. Again, get on that shit more often. Also, you've got a website, motorsport101.com.
We now live in a world where F1 highlights are easier to post than cycling highlights. Don't even get me started on MotoGP.
As someone who has luckily brokered a recent deal with Dorna to make sure we could actually show biking highlights on social media, I refuse to comment on this discussion.
great legal protection for yourself there, bud.
Of course. Please don't sue. You can check out our website, motorsport101.com, including the blog section where you can get some extended views on every bit of weekend's action, including this one from yours truly on Saudi Arabia itself. And if you really like us, you can back us financially on Patreon. Patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of our content. $10 gets you in the supporters club of our Discord server. We can listen to these episodes live as they are being recorded. As Jason and Ghost Raptor are doing so right now in the chat. Thank you, boys. I hope you guys are enjoying the show tonight and all of that good stuff. Right after this, let's talk a little game theory and talk about the 2025 Saudi Arabian Grand Prix.
Hello, Internet. Welcome to Game Theory.
Well, it will be a Grand Prix remembered for its first 15 seconds. Max Verstappen takes off from pole, but is beaten to turn one via an exceptional second phase of the start from Oscar Piastri, who then runs Max all four wheels off the road, with the Dutchman cutting the corner to retain the position. The stewards intervene, issue Max a 5-second time penalty for leaving the track and gaining an advantage, and that pretty much defined the race. Max was able to stay ahead and even pull away, but with the 5 seconds taken at the one and only stop, thanks Pirelli, loving these consistent one-stop races these days, Piastri would retake the lead and win it by just over 3 seconds over Max in second place, with Charles Leclerc doing the Lord's work, but coming up a relatively distant third, about 8 seconds back.
Well, I hate the fact that that might have been the last F1 race for Ferrari that the Pope got to see, God rest his soul. He certainly blessed Charles Leclerc with some holy pace in the end of that race. More about that a little bit later. But we got to talk about, I hate that this was the only real flashpoint to come out of this entire Grand Prix, besides maybe Gabriel Bortoleto almost turning his mentor into an airplane crash. That was literally it. I don't know how the F1 TV lot managed to make an 8-minute highlight reel of this race. How?
God, that is it with Bortoleto and Alonso. Alonso's like, I'm not going to feed him anymore. I'm like, oh, we're taking the Jos Verstappen route to driver development. Great.
I do not recommend doing this, but no, we have to talk about this penalty. And look, a Red Bull and a McLaren go into a tight left-hand corner, and the bait breaks out about who reached the apex first. Does this sound familiar to you, gentlemen? Because we had this less than a year ago.
Just be quite clear. Before we get to the actual incident itself, can we just take some TNT, place it around turn one and two, and wipe this corner complex off the face of the earth forever?
Not a fan of turn one and two, King.
I mean, we've been following motorsport for a long time, and we've all seen the video of that infamous turn one at Assisleben in Germany.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I never thought about it like that, but now you mention it. Shit, it really
Whoever
does
designed this first corner to be taken into a dark room and beat about the head. That same sentence can very much fit this corner complex, because I swear, we've been coming here since 2021, and there has been an incident in at least one form of open wheel motorsport every time we come here, and it's the same damn incident.
It does not help that this is a 27 corner track, which is crazy to even think about in modern day F1, that an F1 track's got 27 corners in it and is under 90 seconds for a lap, because the average speed is nearly 160 miles an hour for a lap round here now. And like, but it's only got two real passing opportunities. The final corner, which encourages DRS chess, as I like to call DR chess, as Cam Buckley likes to call it. And we all saw how that played out in 2021 and we all saw how that played out in 21 and 22 when it was people playing chicken with the line to get the advantage. And then the massive 0.8 of a mile long straight afterwards on a run down in what is a 210 mile an hour braking zone into a horrible 90 degree left hander, which is really only a one line corner. And you can barely get two cars through it side by side. And I think that is a big culprit as to how we got here in the first place. Because, look, Max takes the race in line by all accounts. The problem is there's a McLaren in the way.
Well, this is the problem with the rules of engagement. As we talked about it very extensively in our Discord server in past incidents and in this situation. You are incentivized to get to the apex first. How you get to that apex is up to you. And via the punishments handed out, we have introduced NBA foul baiting and flopping into Formula One.
Well, do you agree with that, King? Because it's an interesting one, because I was like, King put that out, Cam put that out on Monday. And I can't deny it did feel a little bit like a footballer taking a dive, because it seems to me that the new trick is rolling off the brake as you come through the corner and maybe trying to make sure you get to the apex first and then worry about the consequences later. Because we saw Max essentially do that in Austin, turning defense into offense when he got to that turn 12 apex against Lando Norris. But he got to the apex first, so it was basically his corner. Piastri did it to him this time round, and Max gets dinged with 5 seconds. I mean, how did you feel about it after seeing it, how it played out?
It's weird, because essentially, you're under no impetus to actually need to make the corner. You can take the runoff every single time, as long as the stewards deem that you didn't do it to gain an advantage, which that is very subjective.
Yeah, it's the problem where Sasha, supporter of the show, really broke it down. Great. It's like, you're incentivized to take it at a speed where you know you can't make the corner, whether it's going wide or cutting the corner, because you can claim that you were ahead at a certain point and the driver alongside you made you take actions outside your control. And it means that Oscar is absolutely incentivized to fire it up the inside of Max. He actually broke later, as we found out through, seeing telemetry posted on the internet. He broke later than Max to do that, as he is incentivized to do. Max then rolls off the brakes, as he is incentivized to do, to try and reclaim the apex before they get there. There's no way either of them make the corner in that scenario, and Oscar still goes two wheels off to do it. They both knew exactly what they were doing, and these rules justify the actions.
Yeah, because there's nothing in the rules saying that, nothing in the rules anymore saying that, the leading car has to leave enough room for, someone passing them to stay on track, meaning that they can run off. And because of that, the passing car kid is completely justified in also running off. There's literally no reason to stay on the racetrack.
Yep. Piastri did exactly what he needed to do to make sure he had the corner. He was 2 feet in front at the apex, and he made sure he intentionally ran two wheels off the road on the run up to turn two so that Max had no choice but to come off the road. He was beaten to the corner, but Piastri, look, the rules allow this. Especially after what happened in Austin last year, where the FIA sat down with the current drivers and said, how do you think we should go about this? And according to a certain head of the GPDA as a driver's rep, 19 out of the 20 drivers agreed that this is what they wanted to do, where basically running somebody four wheels off was now legal as long as you got to the apex first.
Well, who was the dissenting driver in that situation?
According to people in the know, Max Verstappen. Ironically, the one man who didn't want this rule to change, it was Max Verstappen, the person that you could argue was the key fire starter in this rule being changed in the first place. Like,
ain't that some shit?
Like, if you put all 20 drivers in the room and Max Verstappen was the last guy in and he saw the other 19 after this vote, I'd have said, no, I know it smells funny in here. Because that's what's happened here. From a political standpoint, this, for me, feels like essentially the rest of the field didn't like the fact that Max Verstappen was exploiting a loophole in the rules, and then they took it upon themselves to go, well, we want to do this too. So we're now going to make the Verstappen move legal so we can all do it. And now Max basically got game theoried by the rule change he did not want. It's amazing how backwards this has all ended up playing out over the last 6 months.
Yeah, and what it ends up creating is, like, again, it's foul baiting. It's flopping, but at 205 miles per hour. Because Oscar goes into the corner with no intention to leave Max any room. Max goes into the corner fully intending to run off the track and cut the corner. They're both justified by the nature of the rules right now.
Yeah,
and that's, like, what makes this a very big problem.
If this was a game of football, Oscar Piastri is a defender who's stuck his knee out maybe 6 inches as an attacking player's come towards him. Verstappen has had no contact but dives anyway, saying that the other guy's in the wrong. We've brought this to Formula One. Like, I think we've been doing this in some variety now for nearly 15 years as friends, pundits, hobbyists, journalists, you name it, right? Do you remember back in our day? I sound old even saying this, given we're both now in our 30s. I mean, we started this when we were teenagers. Back in our day, we used to always leave a car room space. I don't know about you, but I prefer those days of racecraft than what we've got right now, where you're now encouraged to run people off.
Yeah, and, like, traditionally, the rules of racing operated on the pretense that it was not safe to leave the racing circuit. The leading car always had to leave room for an overtaker to get around them if there was any overlap at all. You didn't have to be wheel to wheel or have a nose in front or be ahead at the apex. If there's simply any overlap, you had to leave room. And it was on the overtaking driver to safely complete the overtake.
What was wrong with that?
Nothing was wrong with it.
There was nothing wrong with that. The track limit was respected. The track limit was respected, and it gave an equal amount of incentive to the attacker and the defender. That's the point. These rules now heavily favor the aggressor, because as long as you now get to the apex first, it's fair game what happens afterwards, as long as you keep two wheels on the track.
Like,
it's ridiculous.
My theory is that, you know, since, like, even during the early days of the DRS, it was still pretty difficult to get passing. And simply, the people involved got so desperate for overtaking that they're like, no, have at it. Whatever you want to do, go out there and do it.
Well, and it's gotten more prevalent as the cars have gotten bigger and it's become even more difficult to pass because, save for, what, 22 and 23? It got harder to pass almost every single year. Mm-hmm. So you had just an insane pace delta. And the problem now is, like, if Max is a foot further in front of where he was, Oscar gets a penalty for running him all four off, even though all the tension behind both of their moves are exactly the same.
We saw literal examples in the F1 race and the F2 weekend as well, because F2 ran here as a support series. Like, I'll give you a peak example. Liam Lawson got dinged for leaving the track and gaining an Austin advantage and got a 10-second time penalty for it. Alex Dunn in the Formula 2 race ran Luke Browning off in the sprint, ran Browning four wheels off, but because Browning got to the apex first on the outside in his case, Dunn got hit with a 10-second time penalty for forcing another driver off the track.
And Dre, so now, this would have been a 10-second time penalty for Max for cutting the corner had they not applied mitigation to the fact that it was lap one, turn one.
Which they is said as much because
in their stewards report. Mm.
Which, again, I don't think that's a mitigating circumstance. They had the whole track in front of them. Like turn one should not in itself be mitigation.
Unless you're like three or four rows deep and you have to check up to avoid someone in front of you.
Yeah,
like,
they're the two leading cars in the race.
This open road in front of you.
It goes back to this problem of attempting to commit black and white rulings to overtaking, which is an inherently gray thing. There needs to be some kind of middle ground between the guy in front gets a penalty or the guy behind gets a penalty, depending on a matter of 4 or 5 inches, when the intention is exactly the same in what they're both doing entering the corner.
I don't like the fact that 2 feet and the way this played out meant somebody had to be penalized. There needs to be a wash in the rules somewhere now, because the moment Piastri commits to that corner and the moment Max commits to rolling off the throttle, someone's getting dinged with a penalty, barring stewards thinking there's a big enough mitigating circumstance where they go, you know what, no party is wholly responsible.
And they crashed. The only way to avoid a penalty in that situation is if the two of them crashed into each other.
Like Tsunoda and Gasly did, like another mile up the road when they hit each other, forced out a safety car, and the stewards after the race said, no party's really to blame. if it gets to a point where contact is the deal breaker for a penalty, something has gone wrong here. We should not be encouraging that at all.
That's why, like, the traditional way of thinking works so well, because you could deem a no-fault incident, you could deem something a racing incident if everyone did what they were supposed to do and there was still a collision anyway. So say the leading driver did leave racing room and the overtaking driver didn't do anything erratic and they just happened to make contact and crashed out. Well, that is by definition a racing incident.
Yeah, neither party was wholly responsible to blame. That's the general steward in line we get on the reports for an NFA on an incident. No party, neither party was wholly responsible to blame. Look, what we had worked so well, and I think King's right. I think we got to a point where we were so desperate to have on-track action at all costs that we just basically said, boys, have at it, chucked out the rule book and worried about it later, until someone like Max Verstappen, who, and don't get me wrong here, right, there's a tinge of hypocrisy when it comes to how people are talking about this, because I think it's very easy for a lot of F1 fans here to go, oh, look, it's Verstappen, karmic justice.
Literally, in multiple Discord servers I'm in, a real nuanced discussion about this incident turned into, oh, well, you shouldn't feel bad for Max, he got a taste of his own medicine.
What happened?
If he was a foot further down the road and Piastri got the penalty, that would reverse back around and the internet would be on fire.
Yeah. Piastri gets a 5-second time penalty and loses the win because he ran Max Verstappen four wheels off, even though Max had quote unquote nowhere to go. We'd be bending the rules to make this an anti-Verstappen argument because he's now the red rag to the bull when it comes to quote-unquote dirty driving, even though the way we got to this point was not because Max was driving dirty, it was because he was exploiting an inherently flawed rulebook. Like the FIA is wholly responsible in this instance to create a sporting code and rulebook that rewards fair and balanced driving. What we have right now is the complete opposite of that. It's nonsense. And until that is fixed, any smart driver worth their salt will take advantage of that rule, because that's what these guys are paid tens of millions of dollars to do year on year. We cannot celebrate these drivers pushing to the limits and all the other narrative bullshit that comes with their job, but then also criticize them for not pushing the envelope on a rule that is ripe for exploitation.
Like, we have walked ourselves into a system that encourages, for lack of a better term, ruthless aggression.
Yeah, because if you are in the right position on the track, it doesn't matter where you broke or what line you took through the turn. If you were ahead, it's fair game. And that is a very dangerous, like, what happens if Max starts playing that game with everybody?
Oh, we're going to have some heated discussions, boy.
We are going to see the biggest crash you've ever seen in your life.
Because if there's one driver that's been prepared to push that envelope more than any other in the last 5 years, it's George Russell. Ah, see what you did there? Gotcha. Psych. Yeah.
No, because he's never ahead at the apex. How do you think he munches all the side pods?
Yeah, I do find it ironic that the one man who was like, let's make the Verstappen Amendment 2 essentially legal, was probably the only other man in the field that had a fair argument, was just as aggressive as Max when it came to racing people off the apex and initiating contact. Funny how these things turn out. And you know, moving on a little bit here, Cam, it's a shame in Max's case because, one, Red Bull, I think, were arrogant about this. All GP had to do on the radio was tell Max, give the position back, and he's in the clear. It's not like Red Bull had a bad race car here, because if anything else, they were the quickest car in race trim this weekend.
Yeah, if anything, Sunday should be encouraging regardless, because, like, Max kind of wrung Piastri out over the course of the first stint. By the end of the first stint, he was pulling away. By the end of the second stint, at the end of the race, he had cut about a 4.7-second gap down to about 2.8. Once the tires would start to go off for the McLaren, for once, Red Bull would start chewing time out of them. Again, it's not that this Red Bull is slow. It's that its pace is achieved through the eye of a needle. When it's in the window, it can knock on McLaren's door. It can give them something to think about. And Max, to that point, put a tremendous first sector in qualifying to get pole. A little over 1.5 tenths up in the first sector and then held on for the rest of the lap. It decided a race that otherwise could have been a true one-on-one engagement between McLaren and Red Bull.
I think it could have played out very much like 2022 when it was Verstappen versus Leclerc. And that was a genuinely great fight. Probably the best of the Saudi Arabian races we've had on this track. So a genuinely great race that was between Verstappen and Leclerc, decided by a second over the line. Instead, the penalty, unfortunately, by coincidence, had a huge impact on the outcome because it turned Max to stop into, what was it, I think about 8.3 seconds in the end. And that was ultimately the difference maker on this one.
Yeah, and this was with each team having one bullet in the chamber, because Yuki Tsunoda, as mentioned, got to Q3 again, then got crashed out at turn three in a racing incident with Gasly. And Lando Norris.
King, we all know Lando Norris is a big Tottenham fan. He's not beating the allegations here, is he?
No, and We talked about it over the weekend, where still a very, very long season to go. Anything mm-hmm. could happen. Anyone could still win this championship. But if Gasly wins the World Championship this year in his first season in a series car against Lando Norris, who is far more experienced than he is, it is going to be hard for Lando to recover from that.
Look, Lando had the pace on him all the way through the practice sessions, all the way through qualifying, and then just stacked it on his first flying lap in Q3.
And then you look at the other side of the garage. Let's weigh up the key stats here. Oscar Piastri has 99 points through the first 5 weekends. He has 3 wins out of the 5 Grand Prix we've had. He's had 4 podiums out of 5. It would have almost certainly been 5 if it wasn't for the wet patch in Australia. And he's been on the front row of the grid in all 5 weekends so far. No one else has done it more than twice. Like, Oscar is now, he's curing the one issue everybody had to say about him last year, and that was lack of consistency. He's finding it. This is a problem.
He's been the consistent McLaren driver this year, and Lando has maintained his inconsistency race to race from last year. And we know the MCL 39 is a little bit twitchy at the limit, but then just about every car this year is twitchy at the limit. The only one that really doesn't look like that is the Mercedes, which for once had a truly bad race this weekend. George Russell's tires were melted after half a stint. I think it should be an enormous red flag to McLaren that Red Bull were quicker in race trim this weekend.
It's certainly a shot. It's certainly a warning shot. Like a lot of, I mean, they get me wrong. I wonder how much of this is just back off what happened in Bahrain, where Red Bull high tire dead track, 45 seconds off the win. In that instance, crisis meetings going on at Red Bull. Obviously, Horner was trying to deny that happened, but we all saw it on camera with all the big players at Red Bull gathering around in a circle.
Every important person behind the scenes at Red Bull.
Helmut Marko saying, we're afraid we're going to lose Max, but heaven forbid the press says, was it a crisis talk? You know, I don't like David Croft's, the way he gets down sometimes, but he had every right to be like, hey, Max, what's going on here? You know, with crisis talks going on.
I like how Max has turned into Marshawn Lynch. I'm just here so I don't get fined.
Quite literally.
Do you want to talk about the race? No.
Not particularly, no. I timed it, Cam. After the race, Max's interview was 12 seconds with David Coulthard. 12 seconds.
He gave him the Bill Belichick. We're moving on to Miami.
Thank God Max isn't dating a 24-year-old.
for him, it would make sense.
Sense. Instead, he's kind of got the reverse dynamic going on. Different strokes for different folks. But, I mean, Lando Norris, why are you the way that you are? Hey, he is now earned that title from Pecco Bagnaia. Because he, like, what do we say about Pecco? What do we say about Pecco? He leaves the door open. What did Lando Norris do alongside McLaren? Let's not absolve McLaren of this last year. Over and over, he left the door open. Max Verstappen is 12 points off the championship lead right now.
Here's the thing, right? Going back to Max quickly for a second here. We just had a triple header. Right? How dramatic a triple header has Max had where Japan scores a pole position and wins, goes to Bahrain, gets mollywopped by 45 seconds by Piastri, can only manage sixth, and then goes to Saudi Arabia a week after that and really should have won this race, was on pole, finishes second. Like, Red Bull are just so wacky.
And they blow cold. The problem I would say for McLaren is the three big things looming over us in the next, really, I'd say month or so. This is going to be a more interesting May than most for Formula One. You have the technical directive in Spain.
Mm-hmm.
And we know flexible wing is the rock upon which McLaren and Mercedes build their aerodynamic church. We know Red Bull has a big upgrade package coming for Imola. And someone at some point is going to have to make the call to cut the season loose and say, we're going all in on 2026. It's going to be a real interesting month and a half.
But here's the thing, right? Mm-hmm. McLaren's got the luxury. They have a 77-point constructors lead right now through five weekends.
Oh, they're winning the constructors' championship like four races early at this rate.
Yeah. But if you ask Zak Brown, he's here for the drivers. He's got two bullets in the chamber. How do you want to pull the plug early when you've got two contenders for the driver's crown right now? Because Lando Norris, say what you will about him, and say all the bottle say you want to say about him, he's only 10 points off the top right now. That's more than manageable. Still very early days.
I don't know. I'm not in that team making that decision. McLaren, they're up against three other teams right now, which have one driver at the moment. And that's not a diss at Kimi Antonelli. He's been superb this year. But George Russell has been him. Zoomed in Flacco face. Verstappen, he and Max Verstappen are in a dogfight for driver of the year.
Agreed.
And there's a third contender. Well, there's a third contender in Oscar. I will give Oscar that due. There's a fourth contender dressed in red. We need to zoom in on Charles Leclerc's face with Charles Leclerc's face. Just like a Flacco 811 reel. That man is driving out of his fucking skin.
I mean, King, it was a sad weekend in Italy for Ferrari for many reasons on and off the track, but
say what it wasn't in the WEC race now, was it, Dre?
hey, we can't talk about the BOP. We're not allowed to talk about the BOP. Anyway, I was going to say, I mean, the way it was, King, I mean, is it kind of sad that this was Ferrari's first Grand Prix podium of the season, five rounds in?
Yeah, this was not what people expected going in, especially in testing, where it seemed like Ferrari weren't going to be racking up wins, but people thought they would be at least in the conversation.
Yeah, Charles Leclerc was 8 seconds off the win. And given how Oscar and Max were on their A game this weekend in terms of pace, that's a small win.
Absolutely.
But we're in the 2013 McLaren phase. Well, you redesigned the entire car in the last year of a regulation set, and you didn't really get what you thought you were going to get out of it. And it's nowhere near as bad as McLaren 2013, whose car was just not functional on the steel belted tires. But 8 seconds is the closest they've been at any stage with their high-speed oscillation issues. And chat, what's going on with Lewis Hamilton?
Oh, are we all dodging the elephant in the room here? Because, look, Lando Norris and Lewis Hamilton, in my opinion, have got one very big thing in common, besides being British and extremely talented racing drivers. They are very self-depreciating people. They are their own worst critic. Like, say what you will about Lando Norris on this show, and we can be quite cruel on this show at times. Nothing we say here is ever as bad as what Lando will tell himself, right? And Lewis is very much the same way. Like, my man was asked by Rachel Brooks on Sky F1 on after Saturday's qualifying session, where he was, by the way, out-qualified by half a second to Charles Leclerc in that session.
It was
nearly 6 tenths. And Rachel Brooks says, what do you need to do to get on top of this car? You know what Lewis's response was? Get a brain transplant. I'm just like, Jesus Christ.
Now,
I warned people about this.
Oh, you warned people about this, but you didn't warn Lewis Hamilton about this.
Look, George Russell... is
the same guy at the start of the season who said that he was in fact built different when confronted that he was 40 years old.
Built different. No one's ever done what I've done. And look, that can be correct all day. But if you're built different, what's Charles Leclerc built like? Because like, if George Russell is an exceptional racing driver, if this is the audition year to say, can he lead Mercedes? The answer so far is an emphatic yes.
Absolutely.
He has been unflappable. This was his worst weekend, and he still got everything that car had to give. But over one lap, he ain't Charles Leclerc. And Charles Leclerc has been driving the nuts off that car.
That was a 30-lap medium tire stint to start that race, go over the top, hold off Lando Norris, who was arguably the fastest man on raw speed this weekend, who was on a new set of mediums to close out that race, and held him off down the stretch. And that was, again, Ferrari's first Grand Prix podium of the year. Charles Leclerc is driving at an otherworldly level in a Ferrari that has been massively inconsistent and barely legal all year long. And you look at Hamilton. Hamilton was 30 seconds back on the road. You don't beat Lewis Hamilton in a normal... And there was no mitigation. There was no funny business. There was no shenanigans that had a role in this race.
Trey,
there was something...
There was something that helped him in this situation. There was a safety car to start this race. I took two other cars out of that fight for the lower end points.
You don't...
The mitigation is towards Lewis here.
Mm.
And Charles put 31 seconds on the man.
You don't beat Lewis Hamilton under normal circumstances by 31 seconds. That is a cry for help. That's 6/10 a lap on just on net run, net race pace. I warned people. I said with Spencer Hall on this very show, I warned people that this is going to be Lewis entering his age 40 season and walking into a team that has one of the best drivers in the world. And is a veteran, staple, elite presence in the Ferrari camp. They love Charles here. And there's a good reason, because he drives his nuts off every week for the Scuderia, right? He was the prodigal son in this team in every sense. And this is a Hamilton that was beaten pretty comprehensively by George Russell last year. Why were people so sure he was going to go walk into Ferrari and be an immediate contender? Based on what? Reputation and vibes?
Literally, yes. Because last year, the thing that kept getting parroted around was that Lewis has no motivation at Mercedes. Wouldn't you think he would be more motivated to show Mercedes what they're losing and to put Russell in his place in their final year together? Instead, Russell whooped him all year.
If he was so demotivated, he wouldn't be giving interviews with Time magazine, basically giving Bron Breakker maths about how he's built different. He hasn't got no wife or kids at age 40. He's fully motivated on Formula One and that this is going to be the year. People were talking that this was going to be number 8. There was deliberate photo shoots with doors open at Enzo's house talking about number 8. Where's that talk now? Brain transplant. We're five rounds in,
and Charles Leclerc is 5-0 against him, with the only exception being a sprint where he did beat Charles. But what we now know about that Ferrari is that if it was run at that ride height in the Grand Prix, it would have been illegal. How do we know that? Because they raised the car and it still got disqualified for plank wear.
That was the worst thing that could have happened to Lewis Hamilton. Him winning that sprint in China was horrible for him, because it tricked people into believing that this was suddenly going to be Hamilton the contender coming alive. Because the reality is, this was always going to be an uphill struggle for him. Always. I don't know why, but people, I think, wanted that. Like, wanted the vibey move of Hamilton and a Ferrari to be an immediate success. This sport doesn't work like that, man. New guys joining teams like this rarely hit the ground running this quickly. It doesn't happen often.
This isn't prime Schumacher walking into a train wreck of a Ferrari team with Eddie Irvine across the aisle. Charles Leclerc is, for my money right now, 1C best driver on the planet. And he has wrung everything the Ferrari has had to give, including 0 points in China. Thanks, everyone. Out of that car. And it is a problematic car, just like every Ferrari for the last fucking 15 years has been a problematic car at one point or another.
Mm.
The Dallas Cowboys of Formula One. And one more big name signing is not going to fix it, Jerry.
But we could have our elite quarterback in Dak Prescott, right?
Your elite quarterback is Charles Leclerc.
And if he's not winning the title right now, then Lewis Hamilton certainly isn't.
Yeah, I think, honestly, with the problems that Ferrari have, just top to bottom, and again, this was their best race of the year, pace-wise, by a mile. The new floor they brought this weekend did work. It is a good sign.
Mm.
But other drivers you could plug into Ferrari number 2 and have them go blow for blow with Leclerc across the season. The only one I can think of, and I don't even know if he would, given he'd have to acclimate to a new team the same way, would be Max.
Carlos Sainz tried and only got reasonably close. And Carlos Sainz is a very, very good racing driver. Like, he's won our Driver of the Year award twice on this podcast. You don't do that by chance. We like the dude. The dude can drive. Like, and Carlos had 5 years at nearly 5 years at Ferrari. And yeah, Charles whooped him for the majority of that time together. And that's more a positive of how good Charles is more than a dig at Carlos. It's just Charles is that good.
Yeah. He's been that good for a couple of years. He has cut out the big mistakes that would occasionally define his seasons. He really hasn't made a big one in the last year, year and a half or so.
Mm.
And now, like, you've walked into the lion's den with Charles, and I don't think there's many drivers that you can plug into that car from any series and go up against Charles and come out ahead.
Mm. Gonna call a bit of an audible here before we get out of here as well, because like Williams being in fifth is calling. I found something that was a bit more interesting to talk about the other day, King, because I know you like to keep an eye on these sorts of things. US TV and the situation over there, because like I did see something that came up the other day. This was the second most watched Formula One race in North American history. 1.5 million people tuned in for Saudi Arabia, which big number. Like F1's generally done very well this year in the US relative to how it's normally gone. It's had a good year TV rating wise, and it's the same year ESPN is bailing on its TV rights deal with Formula One. It's an open goal. You know the lay of the land a bit more than I do across the pond. How do you feel about it? Because I didn't realize until you said it, because I think it was the Sports Business Journal that mentioned Formula One wants a lot of money for its TV rights.
Yes, so the current deal F1 has with ESPN here in the States, it's a $90 million per year deal that they signed back in 2022. Based on current reporting, Formula One wants that figure doubled to $180 million per year.
Mm.
Formula One, yes, is doing very, very well in the U.S., like nearing on all-time great numbers for F1. It's still not the number one motorsport in the U.S., and motorsport isn't even close to the number one sport in the U.S.
It hasn't been knocking on the door of number one in a long, long time. And knocking on the door is being very generous from when NASCAR was at its peak.
And it's not that ESPN doesn't want to carry F1 anymore. It's they feel the amount of money that F1 is demanding is unreasonable for the amount of revenue that the broadcast would bring in. Where, while obviously the NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball, they all have stoppages built in naturally where you could show ads, that doesn't exist for F1. And the last time ESPN tried it with F1, there was a straight up fan revolt.
It leaves things in a very interesting place because, like you said, ESPN, they don't want to accept F1 as a loss maker for their brand. Because certain times, certain sports, you take a loss because you want to have it on your network and you're making enough money elsewhere where you can afford to take the hit. ESPN is not thinking in that way. They've had to be a bit more shrewd with its money in recent years into where their money's going. Stephen A. Smith's back pocket. But the point we're getting at here is that $180 million for a TV product that's peaking at 1.5 million.
It's a lot of cheddar.
Doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And I'm not. And
it is peaking at that amount for 24 race weekends.
Yeah. That's it.
And not all of them will do that because you will have certain races that are in very unreasonable time zones. And that
is something that Formula One will likely have brought up, because even the races in unreasonable times, like unreasonable time slots, are doing like crazy numbers.
Like, didn't Australia do nearly 1 million and it's like a horrible time slot?
Yes.
Like, China did, like, nearly a million. Like the bad races are still popping nearly a million viewers, which in the US is nuts, given that the US are going to have more dodgy time slot races than say, us in Europe, because it's built for a European audience in mind predominantly, and America's going to be between 5 and 8 hours back, depending on time zone, where they're at, and, of course, where F1 is at. And, again, we have night races because it's to favor the European audience at a more convenient time slot. So the fact that even the bad ones that are going at, like, 1 a.m. or 3 a.m. Eastern are still popping nearly a million is crazy. If ESPN don't renew King, where could you see Formula One going? Do you think Fox might take it on? I mean, basically have them be Speed Channel 2? Because they've already got NASCAR, the number one player in the game, and they've got IndyCar, which is a nice little... It's like putting a cherry on top of a nice cake in terms of their motorsport coverage. Could you see a world where they take F1 as well? Or could you see it going elsewhere? Is it a Netflix move?
A confusing dilemma. Because essentially F1 likely won't go to streaming because they have their own streaming service. That would be kind of redundant. If they did, it would be a play for money. That straight up, hey, we're selling our streaming rights to Netflix. We're essentially killing F1 TV in the United States, and it's not. I don't think people would be happy by that move, happy about that move. And the only way that F1 could justify it is if Netflix were going to pay an ungodly sum of money, which, again,
not unthinkable.
It's not unthinkable. The problem is that there is another comparison here in the US where that backfired tremendously, where Major League Soccer signed a streaming deal with Apple to move the majority of their games to Apple TV. It has been extremely lucrative for Major League Soccer, but it is kneecapped their public presence in the US.
Yeah, like, I don't see anyone talking about Major League Soccer on a TV standpoint, whatever, it's on Apple, unless it's a Lionel Messi highlight, which goes on Instagram, which is inevitable because of Inter Miami's popularity now that he's over there. But beyond that, like, the public dialogue about soccer in the US, I don't see it. And I'm pretty tapped into America compared to most Brits. And I just don't see it. It's really weird. And if you don't see it, then how do you make money on it at the end of the day? Like, the Netflix thing for me isn't unthinkable. They've just spent $5 billion on the WWE. And that was the first real trigger point for Netflix going, okay, we're now in the live sports industry. And
that's the thing. For WWE, it wasn't an all or nothing move. They just moved just Monday Night Raw to Netflix here in the US.
Mm.
Still on television.
It's a safer gambit. I can't see, I mean, I remember when Greg Maffei was on a podcast that I produced, the James Allen F1 podcast, and he talked a lot about wanting to make Formula One more direct to consumer. And that came up like two or three times in the interview that Greg had with James on this. And I wonder if that's the move that F1 ends up making, saying we're just going to go all in on our own streaming platform and go from there. I what would it have to charge to justify that? I don't know. I mean, it wouldn't be cheap. If MotoGP's video pass is anything to go by, that would be a very expensive deal. But it seems too early to me, King.
It's too early because, unlike other sports, motorsport is different. The teams themselves need for the broadcast to be a big platform because they have sponsors. Mm-hmm. Like, it could be a situation where if they go to streaming, yes, F1 itself would make a lot more money, but for the teams, they could see sponsorship losses and they could start struggling financially, and they could eventually reach a point, which happened with MLS, where their teams say, hey, we need to cut this deal short, limit it, and get broadcast back on TV because we need those eyeballs.
As Raptor in our chat quite rightly says, at the end of the day, Americans watch cable sports. They don't like streaming nearly as much. It still feels like the big live sports switch to streaming is still at least 10 years away. That's the impression that I get. We're just not there yet where it can be sustainable for a sport of that size to be streaming only. You need some kind of TV presence.
Yeah, I'd say, and if you look at, say, the average age of people who watch sports in the U.S. on TV, and you look at the average age of people who subscribe to streaming services, there's usually a gap that is two or three decades big. There is overlap, but largely they are two completely different audiences.
Good luck to them on that one. We'll keep tabs on that. It's going to be a very fascinating story to see. Will there be a bidding war for F1? Will F1 be able to get that $180 million a year price tag it's asking for? I'm not optimistic about that. F1's in a good place in US TV right now, but I'm not sure it's in that good a place where it can demand double its money. We will have to wait and see. Formula One, ironically, talking of America, is back in America next week for the Miami Grand Prix. Actually, quite looking forward to Miami. I'm looking forward to Miami. I genuinely am. I think stage compound softer tires could make it a more interesting race, and I think Miami's a bit underrated when it comes to passing opportunities. I like Miami. I'm looking forward to it. Just keep LL Cool J off the intros this time, all right? beyond that, I'm happy.
Yeah, and if you see Donald Trump there, then
listen, FBI, this was a joke, all right? This was satire, okay? Just thought I'd let you know, just in case anybody starts banging down on Cam Buckley's house. Also, about the scheduling of all this shit, we just came up with a triple header. This is the first Formula One race that's got a gap week either side since Singapore last year.
Bloody.
Yeah. And this was coming off the back of 3 Grand Prix in 18 days. Yeah. F1 is hard, folks. I do not envy the people that are going to these paddocks every goddamn race weekend. Because, yeah, this is the first standalone, as I like to call it, F1 race weekend since September of last year. Yeah, says a lot, doesn't it? Anyway, we'll be back next week as well to talk about our bikes, because it's MotoGP's Spanish Grand Prix at Jerez, or as I like to call it, Pecco Bagnaia's last stand. Because if he doesn't win this one, oh boy, it's going to be roast season on this podcast, and we're going to be cooking some Italian. It's going to be...
For the sake of all of us watching, please meet the allegations.
Otherwise, it's going to be roast beef next Wednesday night, let me tell you. Until next time, I've been Dre Harrison. He's been Cal Buckley and Ryan Eric King. Thank you very much for watching and listening. And until next time, sayonara.
Or when you say bye.
That was like a Western standoff to see you would say bye first.
You've got to bring back the awkwardly timed bye king. It's why we have you as the super sub. Get it right.